Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I'm very excited to have with us Jonathan Hammond. He is the author of The Shaman's Mind, Huna Wisdom to Change Your Life. In The Shaman's Mind, Jonathan sets out and accomplishes teaching the reader how to align and transform their own mind to see the world through the lens of the indigenous healers of old. He teaches how to think like a shaman and attune yourself to a magical spectrum of infinite possibilities, unseen truths, alternative realities, and spiritual support. A graduate of Harvard University and the University of Michigan, Jonathan is an interfaith minister and certified spiritual counselor. He also holds certificates as a master teacher in shamanic Reiki, in Cherokee bodywork, and in Ho'oponopono, as an ordained Alki leader guide through Aloha International. He teaches classes and gives lectures in shamanism, energy healing, spirituality, and Huna at One Spirit Learning Alliance in New York City, and Omega Institute for Holistic Studies, and other major venues around the world. For more information, you can visit Jonathan's website, which is www.mindbodyspiritnyc.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Jonathan to the show. Good day, Jonathan.
Aloha. It's really great to be here. And just to let you off the hook, no one says Ho'oponopono right, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, I know. And it's so funny because, you know, I of course, you know, did the Google machine and checked out how do you pronounce it. You know, so I got a few different versions, of course. And I did the phonetics on a piece of paper. But, yeah, it was just one of those things that but anyway,
it's all good.
And I may butcher some of the other terms, but anyway, it's the idea and the attempt, I think, that counts. So, well, I am really looking forward to talking about your book and your work. And before we start talking about, I know, what inspired you to write the book, I know that you, after reading the book, I know that you enjoy synchronicity and coincidence, as some people, you know, choose to look at things. And now, over the 10 years I've done this show, I would say maybe a couple handful of times, I've had occasion where I would, like, read someone's book, and then there would be something that kind of stood out in my mind. And then the day of the show, something happens that it's like, oh, you know, that kind of pops back up. And it's like, oh, well, obviously, I need to talk about that. So that happened today. I have tarot cards, and I used a deck that I've had for 30 years, and I've used it off and on throughout the years. It kind of, you know, comes and goes as far as usage. But anyway, it's a Voyager deck that I bought 30 years ago in Kauai, Hawaii. And I thought, okay, so I usually pull a 3-card spread just to see what the energy is kind of like around with the day, to look forward for the day. Anyway, the first card I pull in my spread is Seeker. And I thought, now this is really interesting because in your book, the first line in the preface of the book, which is one that I had already highlighted to talk about, it's that you say that this book is about becoming a finder and no longer a seeker. So I thought, well,
wow.
Now pulling
that's
the seeker,
right.
and I thought,
that's
the
first line
card,
of my book.
Know?
Wow, that's so fascinating.
It is. So, you know, but of course now, throughout the day, of course, I was thinking seeker, you know, and you know, I think I understand what you mean by that. But can you tell us, you know, why you opened it up with that line? You know, obviously we need to talk about being a seeker.
Yeah, Well, I think that so often in contemporary spirituality, what we're dealing with is sort of an endless processing where we don't actually get to the benefit of the healing. And healing really is a real thing. It really does happen, and it really can happen. And a lot of times when we think of being on the spiritual path, we're just reaching outside of ourselves. We're just reaching something that we just can't quite attain. And there really are very simple answers to being on the spiritual path, to healing, to stepping into your purpose. And a lot of times there's actually internal resistance or wounding from a very long time ago, a whole bunch of reasons why we don't just claim and own and step into who we are supposed to become. And so the reason why I started the book with that, this book is about becoming a finder and no longer a seeker, is because that's actually not something that you hear a lot in contemporary spiritual parlance. It's all about the seeker and not actually sitting in the gifts, sitting in the riches of what we can create if we align with ourselves and we align with the divine. So that's why I started the book that way.
Yeah, I like that. Now, the one thing, you know, because as I was in my ponderance, I thought, well, now, aren't we always going to be a seeker? I mean, and I understand that, you know, one of the, you know, you talk about, you know, when you get to that particular point, you know, and sitting in that achievement or that state or whatever, you know, whatever it is that you were seeking and that you found, just enjoying that. Now, I think it was later on in the book, you indicated that when someone asked you about healing, you know, about being healed, and you had a definition of it that I thought was really good, something about kind of basically being in the moment and
enjoying the moment most
in the moment.
Of the time. Setting things up
enjoying
in such a way that we enjoy the moment most of the time. Yeah, and just to say, of course, there is no plateau. Anyone who tells you that there's a plateau where you just don't have to creatively engage with life anymore, no, of course that's not true. But it is a matter of getting to a point where you can actually creatively engage with life, which to me is the definition of living a spiritual life, that you are able and you have the choice and the freedom to creatively engage with what's happening in your life, with what's happening inside of you, with what's happening in your relationship, and with what's happening in the world, particularly now, and that you actually have choice and freedom to continue to engage and make choices and adjust based on that. So it's not about a plateau that you find. It's about moving into a kind of freedom and a kind of sense of self and sense of autonomy that allows you to create your life as life presents itself to you and as life flows through you. Because as life flows through you, you will shift and change as well. And what is important to you on one day will next week all of a sudden not be important, and new chapters will open. And so it's about being able to tend to ourselves in such a way that we're enjoying that process, that we are healed enough to enjoy the process of creatively engaging in our lives. So that's what I meant by that.
Yeah.
And it's
great.
A pretty low bar
and
if you think about it.
Well, yeah, but you know, the thing is, you know, what I also recognize is that, you know, most of the time, you know, that recognition that it's not something that you know, being at that particular level 100% of the time, you know, because it's, you know, for many people, I think many people feel that there is going to be that particular endpoint, you know, and get disappointed with themselves, you know, for not achieving that particular goal.
No, and there is no end point. There is no end point. Yeah. And it's really about the now. It's about the now. In Huna, in the philosophy that I write about, one of the principles of Huna, and I know we'll talk about that later, is about the now. Is about now is the moment of power. So now is the only place where we can actually access power, because now is the only place where we can actually do anything. So you can't get burnt by yesterday's sun. You can't get wet by tomorrow's rain. You can only do anything in the now. And so that's where power resides. And so that means that we have the power moment by moment by moment to start over, to co-create again, to recreate again. And that's what that's the freedom that I'm talking about allowing yourself to be in the now to such a point where you can do that.
Absolutely. Makes good sense. So why did you write this book? What inspired you to write this book?
Well, when I came across this philosophy, this is a shamanic philosophy that comes out of Polynesia, and I'd been bit by the Hawaii bug, and I'd had some really formative spiritual experiences in Hawaii, really unexplainable stuff that I read about in the first chapter of the book. But when I came across this philosophy after having a private healing practice for many years, after seeing patterns with clients, patterns in energy, patterns in wounding, different symbols and archetypes that kept showing themselves in the client work, what I found in this philosophy was something that was so universal in terms of how one shamanically, how one thinks like a shaman thinks, like a healer thinks. And the philosophy of Huna, if you follow it, if you learn about it, if you integrate it into your everyday life, you begin to see through that lens and you enter into what it's like to actually be, to live shamanically and to think shamanically and to think like a healer. And there is a way to think like a healer in terms of healing your own life, even if you don't have a practice and you're not a professional healer. And so when I found this philosophy, it was so elegantly stated. And as maybe we talk about the principles, they're nothing new. You've heard them all before. You've heard something like them all before. But they're put together in such an elegant way and in such a simple way and such a practical way that it really only requires the discipline and the real heart's yearning to actually work with them and use them and utilize them. And as you do, you see that you enter into all of these infinite possibilities. You know, one of the esoteric word or definitions of the word shaman is one who sees in the dark. And what that means is that the shaman has access to that which is underneath, to the invisible reality, to the alternative reality. And whatever is presented in consensus reality, there is always something underneath it that a lot of times is much more exciting and holds much more promise and potential than the consensus reality that we're experiencing. And the shaman, he or she, can enter into and feel into what those hidden possibilities may be, which then open up this consensus reality to all of these other possibilities. And Huna, this philosophy, helps us do that.
Yeah. So then shamanism then would be the process of accessing those areas, the unseen areas?
Well, shamanism is, I would call that a more like shamanic practice. What shamanism is the it's about the reverence of nature. It's about revering nature. Now, the reason why we would revere anything is because it has something to teach us about ourselves. And so if you look at nature, what do you see? If you take a forest and you leave it alone to do its thing, that forest will continue an endless process of growth and creation. Left to its own devices, that is the energy of nature, growth and creation. You also see in the forest that it's an interconnected cosmology. Everything fits together. Everything exists. Nature never turns on itself. It doesn't tell itself no. It doesn't deny itself what is good for it. Nature just expresses itself. Nature's in a constant expression of yes. And in that way, you might think of the flowing of love and of the creative force. And so to emulate nature is to know that we are no different, that nature, we are indeed nature, and nature flows through us in the same way. We are that forest, and there is an endless flow of growth and creation in us that will always bring us to the next thing in our lives. But what's so important is to emulate, to remember that nature is also about interconnection. It's also about it's also about not closing down on oneself. And that's why, mm-hmm. So that's sort of the cosmology of shamanism. And then shamanic healing or shamanic practice is about all the ways in which we heal the parts of ourselves that don't allow us to do that.
Okay, great. So now you have had a history of being an actor, and you went from being an actor to your current profession of healer,
right.
Author, speaker. Tell us, would you mind sharing that story about that transition? Because I think there are a lot of people out there who are in transition right now.
And it's so important to follow it, even if it feels counterintuitive to when it's time to change your life, to change your life. And I absolutely had that experience. You know, I was an actor. I was very artistically driven as opposed to celebrity driven. Like, I really cared about the stories that I was telling, and I cared about affecting people in a certain way. And that part is very congruent with the work that I do now. But in addition to that, when you think about acting, what are you doing? You're learning the lines, you're learning the blocking, and then you're hoping that inspiration comes through in the moment. And acting is a kind of channeling. And what I found was, as a child, I was doing that, and my parents the only context they had for that was acting. And so they identified me as actor. But what I was really doing, what I've always been doing, is a kind of channeling, allowing inspiration to come through,
mm-hmm.
and allowing narrative to come through and to affect people with that inspiration and that narrative. So I was a successful New York actor for many years, and then on the volcano in Hawaii about 10 years ago, I had a very formative experience, and it became very clear to me. I received a message that just told me that you gotta hang it up, and you have to move into this other work. And to be honest, at the time, it was an identity crisis. It was the last thing that any of my friends or family would ever have thought that I would do. But I felt a calling. I'd always had a kind of a rich spiritual life as an actor, but I was still, that was my profession was acting. And the spiritual life was, I thought, more just to cope with the difficulties of show business. But somehow that really took hold, and the direction of my life changed. And there was also a feeling, and I know a lot of people are feeling this as well, particularly at this time. There was a feeling of, I can't spend myself in this life in the way that I need to. I can't affect the collective as strongly and as I felt like I needed to. That I had a call to serve the planet and to serve others in a way that the acting just didn't allow me to do to the extent that I needed it to. And so it's so important that when we do feel that call to serve, to help the world, to save the earth, even to listen to it.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, and I also remember in that part of the book when you were talking about that when it came time to being out, you know, as far as the spiritual aspects and beliefs and practices, that your manager was kind of like, you know, that's maybe not so good in the industry. And, you know, and I think
I was hiding my spiritual life in order to fit in and to become castable. And just to say too, you know, in this culture, we are all, the expectation in this culture is that we are to assimilate. We are to fit in. We are to look like everyone else. We are to keep up with the Joneses. There is a way to do things, and we're supposed to follow that. And to live a spiritual life, and certainly to practice Huna, but to live a spiritual life is to say that the authority of my life and my truth lies between my ears and in my heart and in my belly, and that there is no one or nothing outside of me that has more influence over how I am to direct my life, how I am to think, than me. And that's a big ask for a lot of people, because in this very social media world we live in, it's all about fitting in. And the spiritual life is about following your own directives, your own truth. And that's the biggest thing that people struggle with, is to let to let their life come through them without the influence of the other and without trying to find your reflection in the other. In a spiritual way, you know, we're following invisible forces, right? We're worshiping invisible forces. We're following inner directives. There's no empirical data to the spiritual life, and so anyone who follows it, a lot of times with clients, I'll say to them, you know what, you're a little weird. And when I say that, I see the relief on their face, because it's like, yes, I am a little weird. I'm not like everyone else. Mm-hmm. And it's so important. It's so important that we give ourselves permission to be who we actually are, even if it's not following along with expectations and rules of society. It's so important.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is. And, you know, it's getting better. It seems that people are becoming more aware of it, but, you know, like you say, with social media too, you know, there is that constant shaping of our perception of ourselves through others' perceptions of us, you know, and instead of how we actually feel about ourselves.
That's right. And, you know, I do think, you know, some of the, just to talk about this time on the planet, I do feel like that the medicine, the beneficial medicine of COVID-19, for so many of us, is that it has asked us to go inside. It has asked us to go and get close with ourselves. And so many people, in fact, all of my clients, as opposed to really suffering during this time, not to say that suffering isn't there, but so many of my clients are having this exponential growth during this time. And it's because they've exited the gerbil wheel, the expectation of society, expectation of job, and they've just gone inward. And in that, they've actually gotten very close to themselves and really began to look at, what is it in me that still needs healing? What is it in me that is false? What about that life outside doesn't feel right anymore? And there's been a deep reprioritization that has happened. And I feel like that's part of the fortification of what is to follow, because when the dust clears and we can go outside and COVID-19 is behind us, that's the time of the healer. And that's when all of us who have done that work, who have gone inward, will help to shepherd in this new consciousness. And everyone has a part to play with that. And certainly anyone listening to this, you're a part of that, whether or not you consider yourself a healer or not. There are all kinds of ways to bring people, to ascend people to love and to interconnection and to reverence for the earth and for each other. And that's what's being asked of all of us. And so this time has been really great about going internal because of that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, literally going inside ourselves, you know, I mean, we're inside the house. I mean, and if ever there was a, teacher or a display of the interconnectedness of everything, this is certainly highlighting that. Not only just people and countries, but also ourselves with our environment, because I mean, things that hadn't been seen in decades, when human footprint was kind of slowed down or stopped for a couple months, really demonstrated our impact, I think.
No, that's right. And one of the principles of HUNA, the second principle, is called Kala. And it means the translation, and all the translations are by my particular Hawaiian teacher who took seven words, and they're his unique translations that he sort of passed down to us. But the second one is called Kala, which is translated, there are no limits. And what that means is that it is a limitless universe. It is a limitless in your own mind, and that means that separation from the other is only an illusion. So another way to say it is that there is only one big thing happening, and each of us is an aperture through which that one thing sees itself. And so that means that any work that we do on ourselves, any healing that we do in ourselves, affects directly, because we cannot separate ourselves from the collective, affects directly the collective. So to heal yourself is to heal the other. So my teacher, Serge King, he would say, if you want to heal someone, think of them and you feel good. think of them and you feel good. And that's how interconnected we are. And I have never felt in my lifetime how potent that principle is and how much it speaks to what is truly going on the planet, because we cannot escape. It's no longer a time to look over there and that's happening over there. It's happening to us too. There's only one thing happening. There are no limits.
Exactly. Well, I just want to let listeners know in a couple of minutes we're going to be taking a real short break. And if you would like to ask Jonathan any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to pose them there. So Hawaii, tell us about your connection with Hawaii. I mean, first of all, I just have to tell you, I've been there just a few times. But I thoroughly enjoy seeing it again through your eyes and words. So tell us about your connection with it.
Sure. Well, my connection is actually something I don't understand. It was just when I went there initially, I kept having these experiences, and then 3,000 miles away in New York City, I kept having Hawaii experiences. And again, I write about them in my book, and I had so many synchronicities around Hawaii that began my search into Hawaiian shamanism. My shamanic path before that was Central America, South America, like most are, but I was called there. The main thing I could say about Hawaii is that Hawaii sits on a vortex of power. Hawaii sits on what was once called Mu, M-U, which is an ancient continent that before cataclysmic shifts in the earth was a utopian kind of place. And it's been theorized that it was the source of so much of the esoteric wisdom that went out to the whole world, or that it was the recipient of esoteric wisdom from around the world. And so there is a sense when you go to Hawaii that the land itself has its own power, has its own ancient wisdom that you can't escape. And there's an aspect of just being in Hawaii that is aspirational. It's kind of like you can't even you have to engage your imagination to even be there because you just can't believe what you're seeing and what you're feeling. And so when I think of Hawaii, and what I want the reader to get is that it's not even so much about Hawaii. It's about aspiration, inspiration. And that each of us need to create our own Hawaii. We each need to imagine our own paradise. Paradise, is, from a shamanic perspective, heaven is not somewhere that we get to when we pass on, but heaven is here. God is here right now in our material lives. We're given bodies in which we can feel all of the pleasures of the body, and that is to experience all the joys of life to their fullest. That's the whole purpose of the shamanic path. And Hawaii just is something that makes you want to do that even more. So that's my connection to Hawaii.
It is a magical place for sure. So we're going to take that quick break. And then when we come back, I want to talk about Huna, what it is. And then maybe we can just briefly cover what the seven principles are, okay?
Sounds beautiful.
Good. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break. Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide: books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms: Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my special guest is Jonathan Hammond, and he is author of The Shaman's Mind, Huna Wisdom to Change Your Life. And again, you can find out more by visiting Jonathan's website, which is www.mindbodyspiritnyc.com. Okay, with that, we're back, Jonathan.
Hello again.
Hello again. Okay. So, Huna, now I understand that you became, and I love plays on words, and you became a hunatic at some point in this process.
I did.
So can you tell us exactly what Huna is all about?
Yeah. So Huna is a shamanic philosophy that you learn. There are certain rules or certain ideas that you follow, and they follow largely along the lines of how the subconscious mind works. And maybe I'll talk more about that in a little bit. But there's a lot to Huna, but the basis of them are seven principles. And so just to talk about each one very, 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 very briefly. So the first principle says the world is what you think it is. So what that means is that not only your experience of the world is based on how you think about it, but that the world itself, that reality itself, will shift and change based on how you think about it. So that means that we are in a co-creative relationship with the world, with reality, and that our thoughts, beliefs, and intentions actually create reality. So that's the first. So the power of the mind is so important in the Huna philosophy.
Yeah.
Did you want to say something?
We can go through them. But I really wanted to make a note on this particular one. In this one, you talked about, you know, that we have a contemporary political example. A negative kind of application of this. It was funny because I'm kind of right there with you with, you know, the view of that experience of, you know, the beliefs that are being, a lot of times I would get frustrated, like, how could they be thinking that or believe that when this, you know?
Right.
And after reading what you wrote, it was like, I can see how that could happen.
That's right. That's right. Because this principle is saying the world is what you think it is. Your thoughts create reality. So that means, particularly if masses of people are thinking thoughts that may or may not be factually true, that on some level a new reality is being created based on the fact that so many people are believing a certain thing. And so there was a certain point in 2017 where someone in a certain presidential administration talked about alternative facts. And alternative facts was something that allowed people to go, oh, if it's an alternative fact and the world is what I think it is, and what I think is so, then I'm going to adjust my beliefs and how I think based on this new fact, and this new reality is created. And that's why you turn on one news channel and you get one narrative, and you turn on another and you get another new narrative, because the world is what everyone thinks it is. And so if you get enough people to think one way, then that becomes a reality. And that really is, just to say, you know, when we sit there with our arms folded and we're mad that others, you know, others are subscribing to a reality that makes no sense to us, to them, that is a reality. And it might be based on fear. It might be based on miseducation. Mm-hmm. It might be based on even mind control. But it is another reality. And that reality then actually becomes a physical reality. And so so that's sort of a negative connotation of the first principle. But imagine using this first principle, the world is what you think it is, to create loving, positive interconnection,
right.
Communion with the earth, you know. So it does work both ways.
It does.
Powerful,
you know,
stuff, right?
But when, when I read that, I mean, it was kind of, you know, it was just one of those moments I paused, of many moments as I was reading your book. I just kind of paused and thought, well, you know, now, I mean, it makes sense. And, you know, and the fact that there really are, actually, everyone's reality is, you know, different, you know. So, I mean, there are multiple, you know, billions of different types of realities out there, you know, that, you know,
there really are.
Very brief.
And
now,
what's one, that's right. And just to say, and the wonderful thing about it is that you get to choose which one. And why wouldn't you choose one that is inclusive and that allows you opportunities to grow and to aspire, you know, because there are a million realities out there. And what Huna says is that you have the choice to decide which one that is. And that's why I use Hawaii as a metaphor, because why not create Hawaii? Your version of Hawaii.
Yeah, and you know, and I think, you know, that choice is the key element, because in many cases, I think people, first of all, don't recognize that they have a choice, you know, and many people would rather someone choose for them, you know, rather than, you know,
make a
decision for themselves and take responsibility. So
and we,
you know,
actually in Huna we actually consider choice to be a magical talent. It's actually magic. It actually facilitates magic. So it really is important.
Great.
And you do have choice. You do have choice.
Yeah.
And if you don't have choice, that's what needs addressing. That's what needs healing.
Yeah. Now, and before we go on to the number two principle, also at the end of each of the principles, you also have a practice. You included a practice. Tell us about kind of how you chose those, and I know the practice and for the first one was regarding beliefs, and it had to do with journaling. So would you mind sharing? Because I think, again, sometimes people, it's helpful to provide a way to apply what they've learned.
That's right. You know, shamanism is very experiential. That's really, you know, that's really how people get it. I can talk ideas, and you know, and this is heady material, but it's really in the experience that you begin to integrate it into your life and into your own understanding. So with every principle and with every major topic in the book, there are practices, journeys, meditation, something to help you integrate that material so that you understand it for you. So in terms of the world is what you think it is, the practice that I suggest is that you just start to look at and write down, what are you believing? What are your beliefs? What's on autopilot? Because if what's on autopilot in terms of our beliefs, right, you know, they say that we have 70,000 thoughts a day, 69,999 of which we had yesterday. And so that means that so many of our thoughts are just on autopilot. And those thoughts, are, according to this first principle, are creating reality. And so to actually slow down enough to actually go, what am I thinking and believing? And do I need to think and believe that? And it's so important that we examine that because like I said, our life is manifested based on it. Like a very simple example, if you are, and this is just an example, if you are a woman over 35 and you have a belief that all women over 35 will probably end up alone, that is what you are creating, actually engaging in magical practice by having that belief and by fortifying it and strengthening it and saying it over and over again. And so if you don't want to be a single woman over 35, then you want to examine that belief and you want to believe something else. And so that's what we begin to examine with that first principle.
Yeah, it's great. I enjoyed that because, again, you know, for me, and people can modify the practices to fit their particular desire, but I think it's a great way to at least get people thinking about how to apply the principles. So, So the first one was the world is what you think it is. Let's start about number two.
Yeah, well, I mentioned it, I think, in the first segment. It's that there are no limits, which means that separation is merely an illusion. And so what that really means is that whatever you want, you're already connected to. That we're connected via thought to anything on the planet. And it's not just the limitlessness of the physical world, but it's the limitlessness of our own minds. So this principle is saying Anything is possible if you can figure out how to do it. And that's just a way to think of it. And so what the practice, I won't go through all the practices, but the practice that I go through in the book is really just about what is it that you want to, what is it that you want, and how do you find your connection to it just with your thoughts, beliefs, and intentions now? Even though you don't know how you're going to get it, you don't know who's going to pay for it, you don't know anything like that, but just to actually let go of the fear and doubt about getting or having or wanting these things, and just step for a moment into limitlessness and feel what it's like to know that these things are available to you with the power of your thoughts, with the power of your mind. Of course, you need to take action as well, but just to break through some of the fear and doubt around the things that we want, there's exercises in the book about breaking through that. So that's really what the second principle is about, limitlessness.
Yeah, and the visioning exercise is a really good one. So, okay, right. So how about number three?
Yeah, this is a good one. So this principle says energy flows where attention goes. Means is that whatever we put our attention and our focus on, whatever we put our attention and our focus on with consistency, elicit the creative energies of the universe that then create the process of bringing to us the nearest physical equivalent of what we've put our attention and our focus on. So that means that what we focus on with consistency elicit the creative energies of the universe to bring about what it is that we want. So it's not just our thoughts that are powerful, but our thoughts actually elicit. It's like we live in a symbiotic relationship with the universe, and the universe will lend us some of its creative spark based on what we're focusing on. So that's that principle.
I love that one. I had Dr. Goswami, who's a quantum physicist on one time, and when I was reading a couple of his books, one of the things that he talks about in that one is the light wave particle aspect, that light is a wave until it's observed, and then it's a particle. And it was like, you know, to me, that was a wonderful indication of, I mean, a demonstration of how something that is unseen, once given attention, becomes something seen and real. So, I mean,
that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, all the quantum sciences, you know, have come about, and they can measure what the shamans always knew. And so everything that I'm talking about here, there is a quantum basis to all of it. I do make a few correlations about the quantum sciences in relationship to the principles. But from a shamanic point of view, we're practical, we're earthy, and we it's just better to think like if you give your focus and attention to something,
right,
energy follows
yeah.
suit, you know.
I know. I mean, but it's funny because, you know, it's interesting how science is backing up and supporting, you know, esoteric practices of long ago, you know, and it's I just think it's interesting because there are people who, you know, show it to me, you know, give me the data, and I'll go with it.
That's right.
People, but and then there are others who are like, you know, just give me the experience, and I'm cool with that.
That's right. And you know, it's good to look at it from both sides. You know, I mean, I was lucky.
Right.
Well, and just to even say, in shamanism, you know, what do we do in shamanism? We play with drums, we play with rattles, we play with bells, we commune with imaginary friends. You know, it's very, very, very childlike. And so, and so the quantum sciences are a way to sort of understand what's actually going on energetically and spiritually in those practices. But if you can bring yourself back to a time when you had a conscious daydream and you created your own reality in the corner of your room or in the corner of your yard, then you were actually doing what I'm suggesting in the book. It's just that if you do that with consistency, it becomes your life. It becomes your reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so how about the fourth principle?
Yeah, the fourth, I talked about that earlier. It's just now is the moment of power. So now, power only exists in the now, and now is the only place you can do something. And what's wonderful about that is it really says you can start over and over and over again. You can start over. The other thing I love about this principle is that it really allows you to let go of your past. And what I mean by that is, you know, we are all suffering from not knowing what we didn't know. This is the cause of needless suffering. People looking at things that they did in the past, mistakes they made, bad behavior, addictions, whatever it was, and on some level they look at that and it's a source of shame and regret. When the fact is that if you really go back to that bad behavior, you were trying to do something. You were trying to meet a need. Mm-hmm. You were trying to alleviate some sort of pain. And so to reframe that behavior in the now is such a powerful thing because when you do, the only thing that is the only appropriate response to that is just blanket forgiveness. You didn't know what you didn't know. And so you can let that go in the now. And so that's the power of that principle.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, that reframing of the past is a very powerful tool, you know, because again, like you said, you know, people carry guilt, shame, you know, some type of limitation because they didn't know. I mean, because of the actions which they, you know, life has taught them otherwise, you know.
That's right. And it might not even be their behavior. It may also be mm-hmm. the behavior of another. Where, you know, if you were mistreated, if you were as a child, if you were neglected, if you were abused, any of those things, what happens is that we hold those things and we form an identity around them. We actually form a sense of self around them. And that's a mistake. Yes, that happened to you, but that's not you. And so you can start to look at those things and recalibrate your identity. But again, the only place you can do that is right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, let's move on to the fifth one. The fifth principle.
Fifth one is love, aloha. And what this principle is, you know, in Huna, we the only ethic we have, the only rule that we adhere to is that love's perspective always be present. And that's really all it means is that whatever choices we're making, whatever thoughts we're thinking, whatever beliefs we're having, that if love's perspective is part of those, we find our way and we move into flow. And if you remember earlier when I was talking about shamanism and the energy of nature is mm-hmm. one of love. That is the organizing principle of the cosmos. And so to bring love's perspective into everything we do and every action we take is to flow with nature, is to flow with the cosmos. So that's that principle, aloha.
Perfect. And the next one?
Mana. Mana means all power comes from within. And again, we talked earlier about not care what anyone thinks and following your own your own self. And what this principle is saying is that the only power that there is nothing that has power over you unless the power within you granted that thing power over you. So that means we all have infinite power because it's only one universe. Remember, there are no limits. So if there's only one universe and we are each an individual aspect of that, that means that all of the power of the universe surges through us, and that means all of us have it. So everyone has the power, and to come from that place is to completely shift the locus of where you create from. So if you think about the nature mm-hmm. of power, so power over something, that only will lead to retaliation and fear, right? Power again mm-hmm. will only lead to resistance. But real power comes when we empower, because that means we had the power to give it. And so we are cultivating our own sense of power to such an extent that we want to empower the other because we've got it to give, because we're so full. And that's an entirely different way of thinking of the self.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much. And I think, I don't know, I've done over the shows, empowerment, you know, that self-empowerment, I think is a lot of people just don't recognize, you know, the power that they have with, you know, within themselves. And so often it's, you know, looked externally, you know, as to circumstance, you know, power and choice, you know,
that's right.
Anytime anyone says to me, I have no choice, it's like, oh, wait a minute.
Right.
Let's look
at
this.
That's right. Yeah. We're giving our power away all the time. We're giving our power. And right. It's as simple as every time you don't feel a feeling, every time you operate on should, every time you follow the directives of others, you know, you steal a little bit of your own essence. You take a little bit of your own power away, and you send it off. And it's not about becoming egotistical. It's not about becoming selfish. It's about becoming full of self, full of yourself. We are all divine beings, and because of that, and what do we do with the divine? We worship the divine. So to worship ourselves to such an extent that we allow ourselves to be as we are, and we allow ourselves to like what we like and don't like what we don't like, that is to claim our power. And it's okay. But again, we're so socialized away from that.
Exactly. And the last one, Pono?
The last one I love. The last one is effectiveness is the measure of truth. So that means if it works, it's true. And if it doesn't work, it isn't true. So what I love about this one is it says that it's only the individual truth that matters. So if you think about like the idea of absolute truth, the only absolute truth is that everything is. Everything else is just something someone made up. But the individual truth, if it works for you, how do we know if it's working for you? If it's creating love. If it's making you more powerful, if it's making you more present in the now, if it's making you more focused so you can elicit energy from the universe, if it's making you feel limitless, and if it's empowering your beliefs, you know, then it's working. So again, how do we know if it works? If it's in alignment with all the other principles. And again, this is also saying that if it isn't working, no big deal. You just try something else. Until you find a way that it does work. That's what I love about this. The Huna philosophy says, you know, there's a Hawaiian aphorism that says all knowledge is not taught in one school. And I won't give you the Hawaiian because I wouldn't be able to, I don't remember it right now anyway. But but the idea is that there are all kinds of ways to do things. There are all kinds of ways to get from here to there. And the one that is true for you is the one that works for you. So that's what that principle is saying. It's pretty empowering stuff,
very
isn't
much
it?
So. It is. It's great.
Yeah.
Now, gosh, we're getting down toward the end of the show, but I do want to cover one more topic in particular.
Sure.
And that's the one I can't pronounce. Ho'oponopono.
Ho'oponopono. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the last chapter in your book. But I think that it's a real important part of
It's the most important part. So,
okay,
with all the talk that I'm talking about being powerful and about having choice and having freedom and all that, we do have to look at, you know, a really sober reality, which is that we all have wounds. We all have hurt. Mm-hmm. We all have addiction. We all have fear. We all have doubt that these things exist in us. We learned a long time ago that we're something other than the perfect and innocent divine beings that we are. And we hold that wounding. And it looks like low self-esteem. It looks like addiction. It looks like I don't look right. It looks like I'm ashamed. It looks like I can't speak in public. It looks like I'll be alone forever. It looks like I'm unlovable, whatever it looks like. And we hold those in and they're embedded in our body. They're embedded in what the Hawaiians call the ku, or the unconscious body mind. We learn them to such a degree that we know them in the same way that we learn green light means go and red light means stop. They're just a part of us. But this practice, Ho'oponopono, is about actually addressing these hurts. Actually addressing these mistakes, these aspects of us that are a mistake, that we learn very early on, and to address them with love. And I outline in the book about how to do it. But if you address these things with love, because they were born of unlove, so if you address them with love, you're giving them the exact medicine that they needed to not have been created in the first place. And that process, Ho'oponopono, is the practice that helps you do that. And so Ho'oponopono, just to give you an idea about what it means, Ho'o means to cause or to make, and pono means right or true condition of nature. But because Ho'oponopono is doubled, it means to make right, doubly right, to make right with ourselves and to make right with God.
Great, good. So, I just think that it's a wonderful topic. I think, people really can benefit from that. And also, in the book, you have a great illustration, too, on the four steps. For those people who are visual, it kind of helps as well. So, now,
you really read my book. This is amazing.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you absorbed it. And, wonderful.
Yeah, great. So, one question, offbeat question, but I asked it actually in May of a guest. In your book, the headings of your book are aligned to the left rather than conventional alignment to the right. Was that a conscious decision on your part, your publisher's part, or?
No, but I love it. I mean, I would have nothing to do with the typesetting of it. That would be my publisher.
Okay.
But what I do love about it is, the left side of the body is the feminine side, and shamanism is the feminine. Shamanism is connected to the earth. The earth is the mother. She's intuitive. She's about seeing what isn't there. And the right side is the masculine. That's more action oriented, more intellect, and more reason. And so I love the fact that it's veered towards the left, because that's the subject matter of the book. So that's great.
Well, it's funny because I had on in May, at the end of May, it was Dr. Bernie Siegel and his grandson Charlie, and they wrote a book called "When You Realize How Perfect Everything Is." And I asked him on that, because that was the first time I had seen that, and he laughed and said, "Well, Charlie, the grandson, wanted that because he felt that he wanted people to that if it was on the right side, people would kind of ignore it. On the left side, if we're on the right side, it was unusual enough that people immediately kind of were shaken out of their, preconceived, this is something different,
I love it.
So
I love it. That's wonderful.
That was that. And then
that's wonderful.
With yours.
It's great. I love the preconceived, being shaken out of the preconceived. That's exactly it. I remember one time I took a training with a Buddhist nun, and she said to all of us, she said, "You know what? None of you know anything about anything." and I thought, what a teaching. That's it, what a teaching. And so I love that. That's great.
Yeah, right alignment. That's what your book is all about. So, well, I really appreciate your talking with us today, Jonathan. I thoroughly enjoyed your book. And now we're connected on Facebook, so I look forward to following your journey there. So is there any maybe final words that you might want to leave with for the listeners?
I hope you'll take some time, whether or not it's with me or someone else. And if there's something that is inside of you that it's time for you to address or look at, know that there's help. Know that the universe, that the spiritual intelligences, that the intelligence of the earth itself would love for you to heal it and address it, because what you heal in you, you heal in me. And so I guess that's my wish for everyone listening today. And you can find me at jonathanhammond.com or mindbodyspiritnyc. Both of them will get you to the same place.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you again, Jonathan, and I look forward to keeping in touch.
Mahalo. Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to be here.
Mahalo. Thank you. Mahalo. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Jonathan Hammond. We've been talking about his new book, The Shaman's Mind, Huna Wisdom to Change Your Life. And again, as he mentioned, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is mindbodyspiritnyc.com or jonathanhammond.com. Both will get you to the same place. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at byteradio.me and select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at byteradio.me. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.